Now, Russia is attacking Ukraine in a full-scale invasion that U.S. officials had warned about in recent weeks. This afternoon, President Biden denounced Putin's actions and promised crushing sanctions against the Russian economy.
This aggression cannot go unanswered. If it did, the consequences for America would be much worse. America stands up to bullies. We stand up for freedom. This is who we are.
Biden repeated that the countries of NATO are unified in their response to Russia and that the U.S. is prepared to defend its NATO allies if Russian attacks spread further. We're catching up on all the latest developments coming out of Ukraine and what could happen next. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about Russia's attack on Ukraine? How concerned are you about what you're seeing? What do you think about President Biden's response? What role, if any, should the U.S. be playing here? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Lowell Barrington is an associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. Lowell, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, Rob.
Lowell, the White House has been predicting, U.S. intelligence has been predicting that Putin would trigger this full-scale invasion of Ukraine for some weeks now, despite denials from Russian leaders. Here it is. It's happened. It looks like the intelligence was right, despite Putin's denials all along.
It does. And I think even the Ukrainian government had been critical of the U.S. in making the claims it was making about the inevitability of this. But it really has been every step of the way. What the White House has been saying and predicting has come true.
President Biden tackled the reasons that Putin gave in a speech announcing the attack on Ukraine. Here's a listen to the president talking earlier today.
This was never about a genuine security concerns on their part. It was always about naked aggression, about Putin's desire for empire by any means necessary, by bullying Russia's neighbors through coercion and corruption, by changing borders by force, and ultimately by choosing a war without a cause.
Can you talk, Lowell, about Putin's reasons for this invasion, stated, and maybe the reality?
That's a really important question, Robin. I think we want to think a little bit about what President Biden said, which I agree with, which was there was not an immediate security threat to Russia, but also have in mind that what Putin really is thinking about here is the belief that he has, and I think it's one of those pieces of him where he really holds this deeply, that Russia has a right to a sphere of influence, a right to a buffer zone around it. And so the talk, even not to mention, you know, if there's any possible movement toward the idea that Ukraine would be a NATO member, he perceives as a security threat. I think he really believes that. But a lot of what he was saying was obviously both made up. There was no ongoing genocide of Russian speakers or ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine. A lot of the things that he was saying just didn't make sense in his kind of long, hour-long revisionist history lesson that he tried to give people. Was pretty tortured in terms of just even the discussion of the relations between the two groups themselves over time. So I think he was kind of a solution looking for a problem for him in some ways. But he did, I think he does believe some of this a bit, though, more than we, I think, probably think he does.
Some of his speeches lately have, as you said, a revised history. He challenges the legitimacy of current borders based on the dissolving of the Soviet Union. Seems to hint that he doesn't like the borders drawn after the collapse of the Russian Empire at the end of World War One. With those standards, there's a pretty long list of countries that those justifications would, in Putin's mind, or at least the statements, give him the right to occupy. Is there a legitimate concern here that Ukraine wouldn't be the last on the list?
So that's an interesting question about thinking about the rest of the former Soviet Union, for example. I mean, I think we could imagine if he really has in mind, and I think some people have been talking about this possibility, that he's thinking about his legacy, you know, 30, 40 years down the road in the history books, and maybe trying to recreate the idea of early Russian czars, of kind of gathering together the Russian people. And if he is thinking that way, then there would be a concern about countries like Belarus, although he's on friendly relations at the moment with Belarus, maybe northern Kazakhstan. I don't think he's thinking beyond Ukraine, in other words, to the west, to a country like Poland, for two reasons. One is Poland's a NATO member, and if he were to really move forward with a move against a country like Poland, we're now at a very, very different place, both because NATO would be obligated to respond, but also it just means at that point he's kind of lost it. I mean, he's crazy to take that kind of step. But the other reason is I think there's a part of him, again, that may believe this idea that he's saying that Russians and Ukrainians are sort of one people. He would not think that way about Russians and Poles. So, again, I would not be as worried about him moving through Ukraine and into NATO territory as I might be that he may try to push into some neighboring territories in other parts of the former Soviet Union.
Do Ukrainians right now think that Ukrainians and Russians are one people from what you've seen from the response to the invasion?
Well, it's interesting because that's been a really interesting question for a long time now. A lot of my work and work of a number of really good scholars of Ukraine has been looking at mass attitudes over time and using survey data, that we have some really good survey data out of Ukraine. And one of the things we've seen is that really since the end of the Soviet period, there's been kind of a weakening of that sense of the closeness between Russia and Ukraine. But the really big change there happened after 2014, where you had a real significant shift in mass attitudes there among not only just ethnic Ukrainians, but even some of the ethnic Russians in eastern Ukraine that had a much weaker sense of attachment to Russia as a country than they did before. And so I think one of the concerns we also might have about this is Putin, because there's a part of him, at least, that may believe this idea of them being one people. I think he may also believe that Russian troops are going to be kind of welcomed in Ukraine. And I think he is very off the mark if that's what he thinks.
Talking to Lowell Barrington from Marquette University, looking at the Russian invasion of Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Lowell, we're seeing reports from reporters in Russia now showing protests. It's unclear how big or the scale of them against the war within Russia itself. What are you watching for in the reaction of the Russian people here?
Well, it was interesting because the Russian government clearly saw some of this starting to happen or was anticipating it, because they made a very public statement about not turning out in the streets to protest the conflict in Ukraine and Russian action, really as a kind of preemptive step to warn people. They also, as they often do, were trying to kind of round up people in advance that they think might be organizers of this. So clearly Putin was nervous about this, and I think right now, again, there's been somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 people already arrested today in some of these protests. So the Russian government is taking that seriously, and it wants to certainly not let those build and spread over the next few days.
I've seen, and again, this is some individual reporters talking to individual protesters who they thought, the reporters thought the protesters seemed shocked and surprised that maybe they thought this was a bluff, as some in the West did, and were surprised that the invasion actually happened. Do you think that is likely to be a widespread opinion?
It's hard to say. I think the word that I would use that I got a better sense of from people there is confusion. That even Putin's own logic, right? So even if we want to believe that he really believes this idea, which again, he may a bit, that they're one people, then why are we attacking them? I mean, I think that there's that sense in Russia of just not quite understanding this idea that if this is an extension of Russia, why are we actually using military force in this way? So I think there's some, I would say, confusion more than shock from what I've heard. But again, I think neither of those are great for Putin, and they point to an indication that he just didn't do a very good job of justifying this even to his own people.
Let's go to our callers now. Patrick is with us in Viroqua. Patrick, hi.
Hey, good afternoon and good program. How much harder does it make Washington to get everybody to line up behind him to oppose Russia on this invasion when Washington's own conduct, as far as these wars of choice, Afghanistan and Iraq come to mind? How much harder does that make Washington's job in a position of leadership here with their own past conduct and wars of choice? And thank you.
Patrick, thanks for calling in and the kind words. And Lowell, Putin had mentioned that, pointed toward those American wars of choice as part of his build-up to his justification for attacking Ukraine.
I think that it is fair. I think it's a good topic for us to debate and think back about whether, in hindsight, we had rushed into some conflicts like that, whether we fully complied with steps that we should have taken to make those decisions and got all the evidence we needed and things like that. That doesn't change the conflict here. This doesn't change that what we're looking at is a violation of international law, and it's a really a conflict without a real legitimate justification. I would add one thing, though, to what Patrick said, which I think what we all need to be surprised by is just how unified Europe has been. And I think Putin is really surprised by that. If I had to guess, I think he thought that he could divide European countries against each other and against the U.S. with this buildup. And that didn't happen. And I think we have seen an even greater kind of unification of the European and American response as we were going through today.
Thanks for the call. We're talking to Marquette University political science professor Lowell Barrington about Russia going to war in Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you hear President Biden's address this afternoon? Do you think the sanctions he announced will be enough? We'll get into those sanctions in a minute. Are you confident in the unity of U.S. and NATO allies here? Are you worried about what's going to happen next? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Lowell Barrington, political scientist at Marquette University, with us today to talk about Russia's attack on Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. President Biden outlined some sanctions earlier today. He said European allies aren't going to remove Russia from an international financial transferring network known as SWIFT. He said the sanction he's imposing instead is just as severe.
Specifically, with the sanctions we've imposed exceed SWIFT. The sanctions we imposed exceed anything that's ever been done. The sanctions we imposed have generated two-thirds of the world joining us. They are profound sanctions. Let's have a conversation in another month or so to see if they're working.
Lowell, before we go back to our callers, can you talk about the economic sanctions, what Biden and allies did and didn't do?
Well, they're significant. I would say I think there are some people, and I think I'd fall in that camp, that were ultimately, a little surprised about the decision not to include SWIFT in these. I think that would have sent a very strong message of really isolating Russia by the international community. But the other problem with the economic sanctions, and I am generally a proponent of sanctions, certainly over military options often, and they did work in the past with Russia when oil prices were dropping. So there's a couple limitations that we have this time. One is oil prices are rising, so Russia's got some reserves on hand already and will have more as oil prices rise to maybe lessen the blow of some of these sanctions. The second thing is these are going to be limited a bit because there are, I think, perceived political costs in Europe and the U.S. If we really tried to target Russia's energy sector. That's the heart of its economy. It's the place that you could really cripple the Russian economy. But President Biden would have to be willing to go on television and tell the American people we're going to see $5 or $6 a gallon gas. And I don't think politically that we're in a place, and Europe's probably not in that place either. So with that in mind, the other piece of it is the real concern here about whether Putin is even making economic calculations. So if he is, they can have an impact. But if this is really the kind of existential security concern that he's laid it out to be, or if we think that what he really has in mind here is that Russians and Ukrainians are one people and that Ukraine is really a part of Russia, the economic sanctions are kind of way down the list of his considerations at that point. So the impact will be limited at least a bit there.
Let's go back to our callers now. Sid is with us in Milwaukee. Sid, hello.
Hey, I was... Is one of the core issues that Russia has with Ukraine is in concept that it could become a part of NATO. Is that correct?
That's at least Putin's one of his stated positions, Sid. What did you want to bring up about that?
Well, so if that's the case, how is that different from our Bay of Pigs? You know, like a bordering, you know, quote unquote enemy right next to you. I don't see how we can stand and say that they have no legitimacy in guaranteeing themselves in their own domain.
I got your point. I think Lowell. So if we would have the right to overthrow a government in our neck of the woods, which has happened, Sid's wondering why wouldn't Russia have the same right?
Well, part of the answer to that is that we're in a different world from the Cold War era. And in the post-Cold War era, there were some understandings about this, including in Europe, about things that would be acceptable and not acceptable. I think what Sid's hitting on, though, is there's a real sense among some people in Russia and certainly in the Putin and the people around him, that NATO expansion represents a genuine security threat to Russia. I think the other piece of it, and we've talked about this a little in the past, is Putin a lot of his current views were shaped in the 1990s. He had a group he used to meet with in a cottage on a lake kind of talks and things, and they were really during the 1990s lamenting what they thought was Boris Yeltsin kind of ruining Russia. They were very critical of the Western influence and what they saw as Western, kind of undermining of Russia. And so there's a real kind of grievance that he has about the idea that the U.S. and Western Europe have already kind of weakened Russia dramatically. And so this would be just yet another step of taking away any kind of buffer between NATO and Russia at that point. And you mix that in with those perceptions, again, of Ukraine perhaps as legitimately belonging to Russia because of historical and identity reasons. And I think you get a real sense that even the discussion of Ukraine as a NATO member, not to mention some, small steps in doing a little more than discuss that and at least taking it more seriously than it had been initially, at least on the Russian side, we're seen as a pretty significant threat.
Thanks for the call. We'll go next to Dan in Franksville. Dan, hello.
Yeah, I remember when they got East Germany there, the United States says, we're not going to move one inch forward towards your country. Well, for the Russians to believe that was nonsense, because the Indians in this country said every contract that they ever made, they broke. They broke the contract with Iran. To top that off, he's the president that's over there, he was put in with a coup with John McCain pumping money in. They talked about getting into our elections, Russia messed with our elections. They rigged that election over there and got that guy out. That was the elected leader, so they had a coup.
Dan, I gotcha. You've already given us a lot to work with. First of all, the status of the current leadership of Ukraine, Dan describing that as a U.S.-backed coup when the Russian-backed leader was overthrown.
I would challenge that. I think that one of the things about Zelensky was he won a dramatic and really kind of landslide election, including with most of his support being not only spread across the country, but if anything, even concentrated in the east some compared to the far west of Ukraine. And I think that, what I would highlight in that question is the concern that Putin has is not just Ukraine as a NATO member, but it's also Ukraine as a democracy. And on the long list of threats that Putin sees as he looks westward, and I'm the first one to say there were some significant flaws and remain flaws in Ukraine's democracy. There's a lot of corruption problems and things, but it was at least forming and somewhat functioning democracy in a way that was really dangerous if you're Putin, because again, there are cultural and historical ties between Ukrainians and Russians, and the idea that group that Putin sees as so close to Russians could be supporting and somewhat succeeding with a democracy is a real shot at his idea of what the kind of proper political system is in that part of the world.
I wanted to talk about that for a couple of minutes, Lowell, the idea of Putin attacking democracies around the world, autocratic leaders or would-be autocratic leaders lining up with him in some cases, and in Western democracies, some parts of far-right movements praising Vladimir Putin as a great... I mean, former President Donald Trump has not condemned the attack. It has been praising Putin's savvy, his shrewdness, and things like that. Is Putin trying to change the world, not just his neighborhood?
That's been a goal for a while. I think he has... What he saw was in the 1990s, in the 2000s, and, he was president starting in 2000... And I think he saw this Western model as something that not only wouldn't work for Russia, but as something that the Russia should be challenging globally as an idea. And again, some of that goes back to his sense that the American and Western approaches were really undermining Russian greatness in the area. So, yes, he's taken steps to what he would see as kind of provide an alternative model for countries and to take steps to weaken democracy. He was supportive of Russian efforts in our own elections, not even just because of wanting a certain person to win, but just sort of, sowing these seeds of chaos in the election is great for him because it shows that democracy is unstable and unpredictable and dangerous and things like that to other countries that he's trying to win over in that way. So, yeah, I think this is part of a the democracy piece is a part of this. I don't want to say, I will not go as far as Ambassador Mike McFaul, who I really appreciate and generally always agree with, I think really made that front and center in his argument. I think that security considerations and the identity considerations might be a little bit ahead of them for me. But clearly, again, he dislikes a democratic model sitting, you know, nearby to his own country.
Time for one more caller. Jimmy is with us in Valley Junction. Jimmy, hi.
Afternoon, gentlemen. I guess Putin forgot about Stalin trying to wipe out Ukraine with a famine in the mid-30s and moving in Russian people and onto their property. And he also forgot about the sweetheart deal Stalin made with Hitler to divide up Eastern Europe. And, of course, he got double-crossed. And who got slaughtered when the Nazis attacked Ukraine?
Jimmy, thanks for the call. Does that historical memory loom large here for Ukrainians, Lowell?
It does. I think that they have not forgotten the forced famine on the country during the Stalin period. And it is real. It's talked about still today. And even before all this, it was been still talked about in Ukraine. So, I think that is an issue. It's a consideration. I think there's two things that I would take from that call, though, that I really want to highlight. One is, if Putin, again, believes that this is something where Russian troops will be welcomed as sort of liberating heroes, you know, breaking the fascist Western bonds or whatever he's been talking about, he is, I think, going to be sadly mistaken. And I think the problem is not going to be getting control of Ukraine in terms of airports and government buildings. They can do that in a few days. The problem is the next 10 years. And the next 10 years of that installed puppet government is going to look a lot like us in Iraq or the Soviets even in Afghanistan. And it's going to be a really, really ugly period of time.
Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Lowell Barrington, associate professor in the Department of Political Science at Marquette University. He was with us today to help us digest all the news coming out of Ukraine as the Russian invasion continues.